Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, brothers? How you guys doing today?
We are doing very well. And Charles, it's crazy right now in the AFC. At least six teams, or at least nine teams with six wins. The first time that's happened through week 10 since the creation of the AFC and the NFC in 1970. So it's been nuts in the AFC. Where do you think the Titans fit in right now in that mix, in your mind?
Well, you know, I think, as you said, the number of teams with six wins. I mean, this is one of those seasons where you're either above average, good, you know, playoff caliber team around the fringe of the playoff, or you're just terrible. It's like it has been a very common theme this year where things are either, you know, fixable for you, or things are going great, or you're just bad at, you know. I think the Titans are in that fixable area. Obviously, you know, just from looking at how the standings stack up, they're on the fringe of the playoffs right now. But we talked about this last week. You know, there's every team right now, sans, I guess you could say, Pittsburgh and Kansas City, has some issues. And even the Colts team that they faced last week, I mean, that team is by no means perfect. And, you know, I think the Titans are, I think they're a team that right now, if I was, after watching, I didn't watch every minute of the Colts game. I kind of sped through it and watched the cut-ups. And, you know, I think the offensive line is one of the things you got to, you have too many guys rotating in and out during the course of a game. Obviously, there's, you know, Taylor Lewan, losing him has significantly, I think, affected the unit. But not just that, you have other consistent players. Saffold, that's a guy you want. You don't want to have to rotate him out during a game because he's banged up. And I think that affects the chemistry of the team. And I think we've talked in the past, they keep harping on the pass rush, but you can't do that every week. And I think that offensive line, getting it settled, getting the chemistry where it needs to be, getting guys healthy is going to impact, you know, not only Ryan Tannehill, but I think the Derrick Henry snap count. There are a lot of different things on offense that would be affected by being able to get these guys maybe where they need to be down the stretch.
So what's different for Baltimore this year, Charles?
That's a really good question. I, you know, first off, you lose Ronnie Stanley. Like, welcome to what your offensive line looks like when you lose a franchise left tackle, a top five left tackle. And, but, you know, Marshall Yanda is another guy that I think people forget that Yanda made a big difference on that offensive line. Like, obviously he retires, but he was still a very, you know, high-yielding performer for them. You take those two guys out of that offensive system, and it affects your ability to run a lot of the run schemes. They do a lot of things off play action. I think that's when Lamar Jackson's at his best. Everybody thinks it's when he's creating, or no, it's their whole game last year when they were really killing it. It was a lot of play action. They had dominant running, not just from Lamar Jackson, but, you know, you had Mark Ingram and that entire backfield, I think, has struggled. I think that has to do, it's kind of similar to the Titans. I think there are times when the Titans have struggled offensively. It's just because of the injuries on the line and the fact that they're rotating different guys in there. They're moving personnel around, trying to figure out how to settle things down. And it's completely impacted their chemistry. And the first thing people look at is the quarterback, and that, you know, Lamar Jackson has struggled at times throwing the football. I don't think Mark Andrews has had the impact that they thought he would this year. I think they really thought he would ascend to, I think he would take sort of that big leap. Maybe Jonnu Smith, you know, has taken in some respects with the Titans. They thought Mark Andrews was going to be number one, two, three in that tight end realm this year. And that hasn't happened. And it's just affected a lot of different things, but it starts up front with the losses on the offensive line. Every team, I'm telling you, this year, one of the big takeaways from the pandemic season is just, and I think it's focused a lot on what has happened over the last few years with the draft. It's become harder to draft offensive linemen, and now it's a lot harder to adjust when you start to lose some of your best offensive linemen. Chemistry-wise, you start shuffling guys around, and it's just not as easy because the offensive line position is completely different now in college than it used to be, and that pipeline has been affected to the NFL. Dallas Cowboys, another team where the second they lost, you know, Tyron Smith at left tackle and Lyle Collins at right tackle, it destroyed their entire season. It destroyed their offense. It, you know, I think it's part of why Dak Prescott ends up getting hurt, because he's trying to create things out of the pocket and running. And it's this year, even with the expanded, you know, practice squads, the one thing I hear consistently from teams is just like, man, we got to figure out some kind of an outside developmental entity to keep the flow of offensive linemen out there for us in terms of street free agents and who we have on our practice squad.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, I want to talk about Lamar Jackson for a second, because there's this theory that's being tossed around now by some in the league that maybe the league has figured Lamar Jackson out, and maybe that the way he plays the game doesn't lead to long-term success. What do you make of that, and what have you seen out of Lamar this year? Obviously, winning the MVP last year, the numbers haven't quite been the same.
Well, I that's the thing, is that we continue to focus on Lamar Jackson, and, you know, he's starting to have some of these passing issues again. Like, Lamar still had a pretty good season. It's just functionally that offense again. I think you got it. The offensive line, any quarterback. Okay, let's go back to the Colts game just to kind of compare this to the Titans. Ryan Tannehill's had an absolutely fantastic season. Okay, well, I can just tell you from, you know, quickly going through that Colts game, I would say he probably had 7 to 10 probably pressure snaps, and it dramatically impacted his effect. I can't tell you specifically what his percentages were on those pressure snaps, but they weren't good. They were not good. And that, again, I think leads into the problems with the offensive line. You lose a key anchor guy, and then you start to have other dependable pieces that are not, you know, 100% in that game, that are coming in and out of the lineup, you know, at various times. And the, you know, Baltimore's facing some of the same things. Like, if they can't have the play action, you know, scheme that they had last year effective, you know, it's going to impact Lamar Jackson's ability to, you know, go through his reads effectively. I'll say this too, Greg Roman, it was interesting because the OC there last year became a really hot commodity, and people who knew him really going all the way back to the Harbaugh days in San Francisco said to me, I remember distinctly late in the season last year when I was asking about Greg Roman as a head coaching candidate. And they said, go back to when he was really, you know, having an impact in San Francisco with Harbaugh. And they said, he did not adjust well once people sort of figured out what they were doing with Kaepernick. And, you know, some of the things then that were sort of considered ahead of the curve offensively, they're like, Greg's got to figure out a way to not just be linear. He has to continue to tweak his system as the season goes on and adjust. And that's what's going to make him a great head coach if he becomes a head coach. I'm hearing the same things this year with Baltimore. They're like, man, it's very linear. They're running a lot of the same stuff. And then you hear obviously Lamar Jackson say, hey, we've got people on defense calling out our offense when we're at the line of scrimmage. And that has echoes back to the San Francisco days, where people sort of figured out the things that they were running with Kaepernick. And you can't have that. And it's the second you hear that about a coach, you start to wonder, okay, is the head coach going to begin to think like, hey, all right, what do we have to adjust around the OC, or is there going to have to be an adjustment with this OC moving forward? The Rams, Wade Phillips was great with the Rams until he wasn't. And all of a sudden I started to hear on, you know, from their coaching staff, hey, he's running a lot of the same base stuff. He's not creative. You know, he's great, but we can't just keep going, hey, here's our 11. You know what we do. We're just going to beat you at what we do. That's not the NFL anymore. And that's a little bit of what's going on with Greg Roman right now. You know our sets. You've seen what we run last year. Our cut-ups are very similar to what we did last year. We just don't have as good an offensive line and can't impose ourselves. And now we're not adjusting. And I think that hurts Lamar Jackson. So first guy who gets blamed is the quarterback. And I guarantee you, if what's been going on with the Titans, you know, pressure-wise and with that offensive line, you'll hear people start, particularly nationally, start to talk about Tannehill when it's not necessarily a Tannehill problem, but that's the first sort of default that, a lot of people go to is always the quarterback. And I personally think people have been waiting to pick on Lamar Jackson since he's come into the league. He's been a 50-50 guy. Some people thought he could succeed. Some people thought he could fail. And it ebbs and flows with his successes or failures.
No, that's a great point. And we've already heard, we've heard some Tannehill sucks today, actually, on the show.
Go look again. I cannot say this enough. Like, for the fans who think he sucks, again, go look at the pressure snaps. That's what really matters. And look at his effectiveness on pressure snaps and decide whether or not you're going to blame that all on him. It's that's how it is. Like, quarterback, it's the easiest guy to pick on instantaneously when every single franchise. And I think I told you guys this before. When I go through training camp, you always have one team to the next ask about offensive linemen. What about offensive lineman depth? Is anybody going to cut loose? Who do you think is going to be available? How's this guy playing? Why is this guy still on the street? Because that just corrupts everything offensively for you. No matter how good your quarterback is, once they get hit, it dramatically impacts them. I'm sorry, but go look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's had great games this season. He's had terrible games this season. The worst game he had this season, watch how many times he gets hit and decide how effective he really is. He goes to crap when you hit him. And so just I'd urge people, look at how the offensive line has been shuffled. Saffold's a really, really important guy. I don't think he's 100% in any respect. You lose an anchor tackle. This is how it goes. And the Ravens, remember, that was the toast of the town, that offensive line last year. You know, you lose a top-end guard, you lose a top-end tackle, and it completely destroys a lot of the things that you do. Because if you keep doing the same things, if you're not beating people doing the same things and just, you know, like I said, manning up and imposing yourself, you have to change functionally the scheme to adjust to those injuries. And that's not easy to do midseason.
You mentioned Jim Harbaugh, and I'd love to know right now, because it has become a topic in college football about his future at Michigan. Yeah. Is he a commodity in the NFL right now?
let me put it to you this way. The only place on earth that I have heard Jim Harbaugh is a commodity in the NFL is at Michigan. I think Michigan... I think they hope he's a commodity. I really, truly do. I don't think Michigan wants to fire Jim Harbaugh in any respect. I think they want an NFL team to come and get him and hope that it kind of resolves itself that way. And I just don't know if that's the case. I really don't. I haven't heard anybody out there that says, hey, we look back at, you know, the things that Jim was doing, and now we feel like, you know, he's perfect for our game now. He just isn't someone that 4 or 5 years ago, he was still a hot commodity. I have not heard that since. And I would tend to believe that if he were hired as a head coach in a franchise right now, it would be an extreme amount of criticism. And I think a lot of people would go back and look at those San Francisco teams and go, they did some good things offensively. The league appeared to catch up to them. And then, oh geez, everybody forgot how great those defenses were for San Francisco at the time that, you know, he peaked out in San Francisco. Never mind the fact that, you know, he burned out relationships there and you had all that. And then he went to Michigan and name a quarterback he developed. Name one quarterback that he's developed at Michigan. You're going to hire that guy? That's who you're bringing in? I don't see it.
Sounds like a Lions hire to me, Charles, but we'll see.
that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, last thing for you here. Saints moving forward the next little bit here without Drew Brees. Could we see a famous Jameis Winston resurgence in his career the next couple of weeks in New Orleans?
That one's going to be interesting. So I talked to somebody with New Orleans yesterday and said, you know, okay, so what's the deal? Who's your quarterback? And he told me, he said, Sean Payton's, he's being really indecisive right now. So they had a meeting And I think that people walked into that meeting feeling like, okay, we're going to come out of this knowing, is it going to be Jameis? Is it going to be Taysom? Or are we going to have to figure out how to balance these two guys? And it sounds like Sean wasn't ready to commit, you know, that he wanted to look at some things. And I know Sean came out and kind of suggested, well, we don't want to name our quarterback now. You know, all that does is give a team a chance to prepare for us early in the week, and we're not going to do that. I think there's some indecisiveness there that's stopping him from, like, remember, it really isn't until tomorrow that I think it becomes overtly obvious, you know, who the quarterback's going to be. I think they'll try to go with both guys, and I think the problem they have is, although Sean looks at Taysom Hill and thinks this is the starting quarterback that, you know, we can groom into the position, he has a package set for Taysom that then they would have to take away if he becomes the starting quarterback. Whereas Jameis is the better passer right now. They know that. The guy I talked to yesterday was like, look, it's clear in a way he's the better passer. And then it also gives them the ability to keep the Taysom package on the field. So I think they're going to try to thread the needle here and use both of them. I'd be surprised if he just outright named Taysom. Although I do think there is a sense in the building among some people who believe, like, hey, you know what? Give Taysom a shot. He struggles and it doesn't work. You have Jameis as the fallback, and that sort of resolves in our mind where we're at moving forward. Maybe Jameis becomes a little more of a priority in terms of the future, and Taysom becomes what he is, sort of an H-back, you know, gimmick guy, and we figure out, you know, how to move forward beyond Drew at some point. But, man, I will say this, the Drew Brees thing, that injury is, I mean, multiple broken ribs on both sides of your cage and a punctured lung. That is a new one on me to ever see a guy that just jacked up and continue to play a game.
Ugh, does not sound fun whatsoever. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexroy. Charles, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys. Stay safe this week.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You as well. When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans. Who does Sunday's game mean more to, the Titans or the Ravens? We'll debate on the other side. This is Robbie and Rexroy on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is not last year's Baltimore Ravens, and we all need to accept that. Last year, Baltimore on offense was two things. They were explosive, and they were dominant. Like, in the explosive, mm-hmm. both in the run and the pass game. That's not happening this year. They were dominating at the line of scrimmage. That's not happening this year. This is 3 weeks in a row now. Remember, 3 weeks ago, Hollywood Brown was outspoken about not getting the ball enough. Last week, Lamar's talking about their offense being predictable. And then last night, they scored 17 against the defense that the week before the Jets hung 27 on. No, this offense doesn't do mm-hmm. anything well. It doesn't do anything that a defense is going to look at this year and go, ah, you know, that scares me. Or we got to be focused on stopping that. Last year, it was Lamar in the run game. It was the three tight end package. It was the play action game. They don't have that this year. This is not last year's Ravens team. And I'll keep it real. Their season is on the brink. Their season on the brink of being lost.
That was Dan Orlovsky from ESPN talking about the Ravens, maybe their season potentially being on the brink here heading into this game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, as you hear Orlovsky diagnose the state of the Ravens right there, what do you make of his comments about the offense, and what do you make of maybe the Ravens being in some trouble here heading into this game against the Titans?
Well, certainly, you come off a loss. I mean, think about even with the Patriots, it wasn't long ago, and perceptions on teams change in this league quickly, but it wasn't that long ago, it looked like they were toast and just bad. And this was sort of a season-saving game for the Patriots, and they just ran the ball right at the Ravens, and the Ravens looked awful on offense, and it was a bad weather game, so you take that into account, but still – you know, I just think the Ravens are, for a variety of reasons, just not as good as last year. So they're going to look at this like desperate situation. Angry team, angry about last week, angry about last year with the Titans. I mean, if you really want to get into who needs this game more, and if you consider it in terms of the wild card race, well, the Titans do to me. Because the Ravens' schedule after Titans and then Steelers next week gets incredibly Charmin soft. They don't care about that. They're not looking at it that way. But the reality of the Ravens and the Titans is that the Titans have a tougher road from here than the Ravens do.
I would agree, and I think the Titans, when you've lost three or four games, this is a crucial stretch. Like, you've got to be able to prove, number one, I think your offense needs to get back on track. That's going to be a tough ask this week against a Ravens defense that, albeit not completely healthy, but still pretty good in the grand scheme of things, especially compared to some of the defenses that you saw earlier in the season. This is an important week for the offense to get back on track. And Orlovsky talked about the Ravens offense there. Well, the cure-all for a lot of offenses so far this year has been going up against that Titans defense. Maybe the Titans defense can come up with a few stops in this game, but I don't have a ton of confidence, even based on what I've seen off of the Ravens so far, which hadn't been very good. I still don't have a ton of confidence in the Titans defense that they're just going to have another Chicago-like performance in this game and hold that offense down.
Yeah, well, this certainly will be harder than playing Nick Foles and the Bears. There's no doubt.
Yes, it will.
It's also, though, like a lot of their failures this year are against teams that it's just hard to compare it to this matchup, you know? And the Ravens are limited on the outside. Charles Robinson just told us, like, Mark Andrews hasn't been as great as they thought he'd be. I think he's still good. He had a good game against the Patriots. But this is very much, to me, just a physical, can you stop the run game? The Titans did a great job a year ago and put them in bad spots. I think if the Titans get them into these third and longs that they've been giving up, they got a better chance of getting off the field this week. It's not the Ravens' strength, but I don't know if they can stop the run. They have gone way down from last year to this year just in terms of just being strong at the point of attack and being sound and setting the edge and all these things that we've gotten used to seeing Titans defenses doing. This one isn't doing it nearly as well.
It's not, and people have pointed out on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com about, you know, press coverage and playing closer to the wide receivers and not being afraid to get beat over the top. We'll see what Adoree Jackson's status is for this game. But I don't look at this receiving core, even Hollywood Brown, and just like am shaking in my boots about them going deep and beating you over the top. Can they do it? Sure. But I would make them do that if I'm the Titans before I worried about just getting torched down the field.
Yeah. See, the thing is, though, I feel like that's the one thing he can do, and I could absolutely see them hitting the Titans. I'm not as worried about Lamar Jackson dinking you to death. That's, you know what I mean? Like, I actually think that the way they've been approaching things kind of makes sense in this game because the Ravens have struggled to sustain drives, and you don't want to give up the big play to them. And Lamar Jackson, I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson throw the ball 100 yards. I mean,
he can throw it a long way.
I think he throws a nice deep ball. I mean, he had a really nice touchdown pass the other night. I think that was to Snead, but
yeah,
that wasn't a deep ball. But, I mean, I feel like he's a guy that you actually do want to play. Let's not give the big play to this guy in the passing game. Versus,
I think the big play in their offense is him running.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I think that's their big play from what I've seen this year of them.
I'm just saying, in the pass game last week, they played a guy who's just like, here, short stuff, back,
right,
back, tight end, tight. That's not Lamar. Right? So that's a game where you're frustrated. Like, why are you covering it like this? He's not going to hit you over the top. Lamar Jackson will hit you over the top and run. I think if you don't give up big plays in this game, they will not sustain drives and just chew up clock 15 play drives the way the Colts did and the way some of these other teams they've played have been able to do. I mean, I really think that if you put them in third and long, you will get off the field more than in a lot of weeks. But the hard part is getting there.
Third down defense getting better for the Titans the last couple weeks.
It is. Now, the fourth down defense then suffered against the Colts. But third down defense was
4 of 12.
Good.
They're making some progress, man.
Well, in fact, I haven't looked, but I think the Panthers – have the Panthers passed them?
They may have.
Worst? I'm gonna check that out. Because our Panthers writer, Joe Person, was like, slacking me this week about like the all-time record. I'm like, oh, I know that stat very well, sir.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the kicking situation for the Titans. What should they do with Steven Goskowski, should somebody else be kicking on Sunday against the Ravens? We'll dive into that. Also revisit our poll question as well. That's coming up next. But first, November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month, and the Preds Foundation needs your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit NashvillePredators.com/365fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights cancer gear or learn more. You can also bid on silent auction items by texting PREDS to 76278. Follow at PREDS Foundation on Twitter and Instagram for more info. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
plan this week to stick with Steven as your kicker, or is there a plan for a new kicker?
As of today, right now, we have one on the practice squad. We've got, DeVecchio on the practice squad who's kicking, but as of Monday at 10:36, Steven would be our kicker as of right now.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday talking about the kicking position, Steven Goskowski in particular. And Joe, a bit of a transition from Vrabel in terms of how he's answering that question. Some ability, I think, if you really want to read into that. Not a ton of confidence displayed in Steven Goskowski in that answer, on my opinion, from Mike Vrabel.
So Sherlock Stillman yesterday.
Yes.
Heard
Ooh,
this
that's a new
clip.
One.
Yes. Yeah, I just came up with it. Thank you. And was like, everybody's all mad about him saying Goskowski's a kicker, but I think I heard in his voice that, in the answer that he's out. And I think most people reacted to that like, that's a definitely different way to say it. But I'm hesitant to take that too far. I've never seen Vrabel tip something like that.
No.
In that way. So this would be a first to me of Vrabel sort of giving an answer that sheds doubt on something and then follows through and cuts a guy. So I think Guskowski's kicking Sunday.
Well, at this point, I think he probably is too. But right now, the options, you can't go get a free agent for the Ravens game because of the COVID protocols that you'd have to follow. So it's really between Goskowski and my guy Giorgio DeVecchio right now on the practice squad.
Because Tucker McCann's
injured.
Injured, yeah.
But that takes us back to our poll question.
Yeah, I can't wait to see these
at
results.
At 102.5 right now. The Game on Twitter, who would you prefer to be kicking field goals for the Titans this Sunday at Baltimore? Steven Goskowski, Tucker McCann, or my guy, Giorgio DeVecchio? Right now, Giorgio DeVecchio in the lead at 40%. Steven Goskowski has closed the gap, 37%. Tucker McCann at 23%. So Goskowski making a late push here to close that gap. It was at like 40% for DeVecchio and 32% for Goskowski.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
The gap is closing, baby.
The 23%, is that, are you, you're like, if McCann's hurt, you still would prefer him to the other two?
Maybe so. How much worse could it be?
That's interesting. I'm on Team Floyd on this one. The devil you can see is worse. No, it's better. It's better than the devil you can't see.
Well, maybe you need clip again.
I may have misquoted
because
Floyd.
We have this from Floyd Reese earlier in the show. He joined us. We asked him his thoughts on what he would do with Steven Goskowski and the kicking situation. Here's what Floyd Reese had to say.
I'm looking at it, as we said last week, as similar to the punting situation. The devil you know is, in my opinion, better than the devil you don't know. And I don't want to get back into the kicking carousel. And, last year you can go back through and you can blame this game on that kicker and this game on another kicker and throughout the list. We're not at that point in time anymore. And so I think you're kind of, at least in my mind, at least you know what you have. You're talking about a Hall of Fame caliber kicker against anybody else. And whereas there are a lot of people who say, well, I'd rather, try the anything else, I'm kind of the other way. I would kind of like, okay, I want to know, have an idea of what I have versus let's wait and see. Because in my opinion, especially when it comes to special teams, the one you don't know, he's out there for a reason. Let's face it. And what you don't know may cost you a game this weekend, and you're not in a position you can afford that any longer.
So that was Floyd Reese earlier in the show. Joe, your reaction to what Floyd had to say?
Yeah, I got the devil part right. The devil you know better than the devil you don't know. I think he's right because, Giorgio DeVecchio has bounced all over this league, and he has pretty good numbers in limited work, but he was out there. He was in the XFL. Maybe he's just amazing on the practice field, but apparently Trevor Daniel is the most incredible practice punter in NFL history.
Apparently so.
That didn't work out so well in the game. I'd go with the known commodity, and I totally understand frustration with Goskowski, and I think the Titans have got to be very ready to move on from him, but I think that it's got to be a better answer than Giorgio DeVecchio. Throw him out there and just see what happens. I'm with Floyd. The carousel last year was a disaster. Did not stop this team. That was also a team that scored a touchdown every time they got in the red zone. late in the year and in the playoffs. And right now I would feel more comfortable with Gostkowski out there than Tavecchio if I were coaching this team or running this team.
And I hear what y'all are saying there, but look, just because something didn't work out last year does not mean that it's automatically going to not work out this year. And I go back to, yeah, it could get worse. It could also get pretty dramatically better at kicking field goals if you go out and make a change. I mean, I think we're operating under this doomsday scenario as if what's happening right now is acceptable. And it's not acceptable. Floyd talked about in that answer it costing you games if you make a switch. Well, guess what it's doing right now? It's costing you games. Steven Gostkowski is not good, and his percentage is not good enough. So I think if there's a chance that you could go out and get something better, you've got to do it. We've talked about the margin for error with this Titans team. It's gone. And I understand if you go out and you make Giorgio Tavecchio the kicker and he shows up and goes 0 for 4, that's a disaster. That's a nightmare. And maybe that happens. But it's also possible that he's better than 60% and gives you a chance to actually stay in some of these games and win. And to me, we've seen enough from Gostkowski to know what he is. I am very comfortable making a change.
So
you can't survive with this.
So if Giorgio Tavecchio came out next game and hit a 50-yarder and missed a 44-yarder, then after that game you'd say what? You're good with that? That's your kicker? You're fine?
I don't know if I'd be fine, but again, what is the difference with that? What is the difference?
I'm giving you exactly what Gostkowski does. So if Giorgio Tavecchio over 8 games is 11 for 16, is that good? Is that okay? Is that fine or no?
11 for 16? Probably not.
Okay.
But is 11 for 16 really a high bar?
No, it's not. It's a bad situation. But
I guess what I'm saying is, like, we're all so fearful of this coming in and getting worse, and you look around, like, how much worse could it really be?
Okay.
I understand it could be worse. But what's the likelihood of that? He's 60%. It's awful.
Yeah. Well, it could be a lot worse.
I don't know if I buy a lot worse.
Well,
it cannot be a lot worse.
You know, again, I mean, 11 for 16 since the opener, it's not good enough. It's not all-time horrific. You've got to get rid of that guy. I mean, I would look to get rid of him for a known commodity who kicks in the NFL and makes kicks. Guys like, I don't know, Cody Parkey, Cairo Santos, Ryan Succop. You know, these are guys who have track records, who you would not mind being your kicker. I don't know who else is out there. If you could get Greg Joseph, I would get him. He had a really good year in Cleveland. He was fine for you. He was fine in the preseason, and that's a known commodity. McCann, Tavecchio, I think it's a big gamble. Now, at some point, I don't know what that point is. Like this week, if Gostkowski is terrible and they lose because of it, then first of all, hey, I guess we can all second guess that for sure. And I'll have to admit, I still think it was the right move. At some point, it's like, okay, well, you just have to switch. I just don't know that they're right at that point because the switch is just not attractive. The switch is really a gamble as well.
So what do you make of maybe going out next week and bringing in a guy like Steven Hauschka? You remember that was the conversation in training camp. We even had, a question one day. What's more likely, McCann, Greg Joseph, Gostkowski, or Hauschka? Hauschka is currently a free agent. He has not kicked this year.
Yes, he has.
Has he kicked this year?
He had one game with the Jags and missed both field goals.
Oh, well, maybe not. Is that a product of being with the Jags?
He's 35.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jags have a new kicker every week.
They do. New quarterback, too.
Yeah, 35 years old. Yeah. I mean, but again, like even with a Hauschka to me, if you got a really good look at him and you felt mechanically and health-wise he's all good, I mean, at least there's a pretty good track record. I mean, well, really good for many years.
But you know what the problem with what you just said is? How do we – and I realize this is me arguing against myself, but at this point with this staff and this general manager evaluating this position, you said if you feel good about his mechanics – how in the world do you trust the Titans to feel good about anything right now?
Yeah.
Because they obviously felt good about Gostkowski. That hadn't worked out very well.
Right. Yeah, I guess it's like if the ball goes through the uprights every time, then that's good. So go with that guy.
You also can't trust them after the decision they made on punter last week.
Yeah.
But I want to know what's wrong with Giorgio Tavecchio. Like, what is wrong with him?
Why he's out there, you mean?
Why he's hit 80% of his field goals in his NFL career. He's not ancient.
Yeah.
His last stint was with the Falcons in 2018, just 2 years ago, and he was 5 for 5.
It's a good question.
Like, does he get the yips in practice, and is he just good in games? I'd rather have that than vice versa.
Right. No.
A la Trevor Daniel.
It's got to be, yeah, stuff away from the game, right? Like, you know, mechanics, missing kicks, not being consistent. It's got to be. But, yeah, you're right. 80.8% is not bad. If you could sign up for 80.8% right now with him, then I'm
take it.
Do it, you know? I mean, they brought him here for a reason. So, obviously, McCann being hurt also clears up a spot in the practice squad for a kicker. But I don't know what the answer to that is. But when a guy is bouncing around that much and then he's out of the NFL, that tells me that something's not all there.
Well, there's a reason. I just want to know what that reason
is. Yeah, yeah. But I keep going. Ask Vrabel. He'll tell us the full. He'll give us the full breakdown.
He's always transparent.
He'll give us everything all about it.
I just keep going back to it. At some point, you just got to move on. And I'm there. I'm there with Gostkowski. He's cost you too much already. And if you keep going this route, I mean, he's going to cost you a game or two down the stretch. And with where they are, they can't afford that.
Well, they're in a terrible spot.
Yeah.
Because Tavecchio, whoever else you want to probably – that they could probably get right now probably is just as likely, if not more, to cost you as well. Greg Joseph, like I said, go talk to Jason Light and say, look, man, come on. You know,
throw me a bell in here.
You've got suck up. You got suck up from us. Look at how well that's working out for you. Can we not have Greg Joseph, please?
Should have gone back to the trading deadline and traded for a kicker. What do you think the value would have been there? Seventh rounder?
I don't know, man. They you know, it's like shoulda, coulda, woulda on a lot of this stuff, but it's amazing how this has all worked out for them.
When we come back, we'll wrap up the show and discuss a potential X factor for the Preds heading into next season. Some interesting comments made yesterday. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. A little Maren Morris to close things out.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. That's country? I mean, isn't that really pop? Yeah. Really pop music?
You raised your voice. That means you're kind of iffy on it.
Well, I mean, I'm not like getting the Maren Morris box set.
Well, that's kind of my issue.
I buy the Led Zeppelin box set, you know?
That's kind of my issue with today's country music. Like, that's good, but it's not country. Like, there's nothing country about what she just did there. It's not it.
Yeah, I mean, it to me, it's country-flavored pop music.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Is it?
Like Alana Miles, sure. Black Velvet. You know that song?
Yeah.
Alana Miles, like, that's a great song, right? What is that? I mean, I think it's a pop song, but it's kind of like country?
A little bit.
Okay, so there's another country quote marks that I saw that I like.
Robbie, if
the bro country out there days were
if it wasn't labeled as country, would you be okay with it?
I mean,
like, is that
in some cases,
is that a barrier for you?
It just kind of offends you that it's called country.
Yeah, it's not
and
country.
Then you end up not liking it.
Yeah.
Like, do you consider Luke Combs country?
Yeah.
He's country.
There's probably something to that. But like some of the stuff nowadays, like the Florida Georgia Line stuff. That is technically quote-unquote country. There's not anything country about that. It's awful.
It's pretty bad.
They have some twang.
Yeah, that's about the only thing that's country. But, the songs are terrible.
They were rocking the Titans uniform review. I get to see them live for free out on Broadway.
I apologize to you for that.
There's a lot of
weed. On behalf of the city.
There was a lot of weed smoke laughing around that night.
I would imagine there probably was.
Just saying.
Yeah. Adam Bingen of The Athletic, your cohort at The Athletic, came out with a very interesting piece yesterday regarding the Predators' first-round pick from 2019, Philip Tomasino, who had an excellent year last year in the OHL, a scoring centerman. You can put him on the wing, too, I guess, if you want to, but a playmaker that the Predators desperately need in their pipeline. And as we head into training camp, whenever next season starts, whenever that date is, sometime in 2021, maybe Philip Tomasino could be a part of the plans here in Nashville with the Predators. And I want to read a little excerpt from Adam's article on The Athletic, a great sit-down session he had with Philip Tomasino, a lot of different topics addressed, but obviously some attention on him to maybe make the team out of training camp this year. And here was Tomasino's quote. Quote, "It's always been a goal of mine. It's my only goal. I believe I'm ready. I feel like I can play in the NHL. I'm not scared to say it. Going against those guys in the summertime, I feel like I'm ready. And I think by getting stronger and working on my first three steps and every aspect of my game, I think I've reached that next level." Some confident words there from Philip Tomasino. And obviously, I've told you before, I've watched him play a little bit. His ability is eye-popping. I mean, he's got some good skill to him. Came here in training camp for the Predators in the summer before they went back in the play-in round against Arizona. What do you make of the prospects of maybe Philip Tomasino being a part of this team heading into next season? And what do you make of his comments there to Adam and his confidence level heading into training camp?
Well, I think that's all great stuff if you're a Predators fan, to see someone who has that confidence, to see someone who he talks in the piece about, you know, some of the work he's done on strength, being more explosive. I mean, that's a lot of things. I think a lot, you know, like Ellie Tolvanen, for example, I think the physicality of the game, certainly he was not ready for that. I think his skill has been good. And, you know, you go from the big ice to the NHL rinks and all that stuff. But he's had to get, I think, he's had to change some things physically. And Tomasino seems to get that. It's also interesting, he lived with Ryan Ellis, learned about healthy eating in there. But it seems like he's got the right approach and the confidence is good. And that's what you want to hear. If you're the Preds, that's what you want to hear. You don't necessarily believe it right at this moment. I don't think it's that simple, but I would say it's all encouraging that he is this driven to make it happen.
And it's interesting because you look at the roster right now for the Predators, and they've had a busy offseason. I mean, Nick Cousins has come in. Luke Cunningham from Minnesota has come in. Brad Richardson has come in. This team looks different. Austin Watson's gone. Nick Bonino's gone. Kyle Turris is gone. But to me, there's still a pretty glaring hole on this team, and that is second line. And what are you going to do there? I feel like most people think they're going to leave that top line of Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson together, and you've got Matt Duchene on the second line. And right now, if I had to slot it, I'd probably put Tolvanen in there alongside Cunningham. But if Tomasino comes in and he's ready and ready to play at a high level, maybe a potential X factor for the Predators on the second line. Now, I'm always very hesitant to put these lofty expectations on young kids coming in. I think the jump is huge going from the OHL to the NHL. But if he's ready and he's able to come in and contribute right away, then maybe you feel a little bit better about your depth in terms of scoring wingers and maybe even putting him down the middle. Who knows? Because I think a lot right now is riding on Ellie Tolvanen. And quite frankly, until I'm proven otherwise, I think maybe more than Ellie Tolvanen can handle at this moment riding on him, just based on where they are from a roster standpoint.
I mean, with Tomasino and Tolvanen both, is it basically they've got to be top six or there's no point at this point?
I mean, I think that's more so with Tolvanen, yeah. Like, Tomasino, I think his ability to skate, and he's not the biggest kid, but he can get in there and get around and play along the boards a little bit. So I think Tolvanen, just based on his skill set, he needs to be in the top six. He needs to be on the power play. Tomasino one day needs to get there, but I think you could put him in on the third line right now and he could play.
Because I'm less and less convinced that they are going to keep that top line together. I could be wrong, but just to find balance. I mean, that's obviously last year, basically it was like you got to do it. You've got to give Duchene a Forsberg or somebody. And, you know, it didn't work out. And then it worked out great to get that top line back together for the postseason. But I don't know. I mean, I think if they can do it, they need to do it because then they actually have a line that can be elite. But I don't know. But regardless of that, you know, Tomasino, that would be huge for this team if he can you know, ingrain himself and get into that lineup this year. Because I just feel like there's a missing name or two right now from this lineup to make it playoff worthy.
Yeah.
A good Tomasino ready for this, that improves the chances.
Well, they're also in a really interesting spot with him specifically because he is, I mean, his age, he can't go to Milwaukee out of training camp. So he's not going to go play in the AHL. So basically your options are he makes the team out of camp, you see what he's got at the NHL level, or you send him back to the OHL. I mean, the dude had 100 points last year at the OHL, and he was asked about that by Adam in his article and said all the right things about how if he goes back to the OHL, there's always something you can improve on, and that's fine. He doesn't need to go back to the OHL. And this is one of those rules that irritates me. Like, he's good enough to play in the AHL for sure. Yeah. Maybe good enough to play in the NHL. This would be a perfect scenario to see him in Milwaukee this year.
Yeah, it's weird. And so if you're him, not that you wouldn't be motivated to be here instead of Milwaukee and all that, but that's a big gap. How can you really feel like your game is evolving if you're that dominant?
I mean, it'd be tough. I mean, look, if he goes back to the OHL, his numbers will probably get better, and he'll probably end up with 125 points if he stays healthy. But, how beneficial is that for his development in the long term? I don't know. I think maybe that factors into the Predators' decision as well, keeping him around at training camp. But hopefully we'll find out soon, depending on when the start of the season is.
Could Deshane, Tolvin, and Tomasino be a thing?
Could be. That may be the way they have to go.
That's awfully young.
Awfully young. But
some unproven.
Yeah, some playmaking there for sure. But we'll see how that works out for the Predators and what decision they make. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rextro. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.